for me, when she walked in the front door, and because I understood if she thought that was her apartment,
right,
and the door's open, okay, mm-hmm. I'm on guard.
This is Mr. Petey Pete. We're broadcasting live from Hudson. This is WGXC Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Phoebes of Gilboa, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Bill Williams is reporting for WTCW-FM. The New York State Department of Transportation crews began ripping up the old blacktop on Route 9G early October 1st. Drivers traveling between County Route 8 or Main Street in Germantown and the Columbia County side of the Rip Van Winkle Bridge should expect delays. In the spring, Governor Andrew M. Cuomo announced an $850,000 grant for the resurfacing of the route through the Pave New York program. According to a press release, the program is currently supporting 91 paving projects and the renewal of approximately 1,000 lane miles of pavement statewide, including at least one project in every county and the city of New York. An estimated completion date for the Route 9G project was not available. And you can read the full story at 985thecat.iheart.com.
Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that on October 2nd, the Livingston Planning Board is expected to vote on a special use permit for the proposed Global Partners gas station at the corner of the intersections of Routes 9, 9H, 23, and 82. The gas station would replace an Extra Mart already at the Bells Pond intersection. But opponents of the plan say the new gas station would negatively affect the nearby wetlands. Now, Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett, a Democrat who represents Southern Columbia County in the 106th District in the state legislature, has waded into the controversy. Quote, Bells Pond is a New York State protected wetland identified by DEC's riparian opportunity assessment as significantly stressed, unquote. A letter from Barrett reads, quote, the proposed project increases the risk of groundwater contamination and runoff into Bells Pond and the Hudson River tributary Mud Creek, unquote. The Livingston Planning Board meeting begins at 7 p.m. October 2nd at the Livingston Town Hall, 119 County Route 19. While Global Partners can continue to speak before the board at this meeting, the public cannot. Read more about this story in HudsonValley360.com.
Amanda Freeze is reporting for the Times Union. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan's proposed 2020 budget totals $179.58 million, an increase of roughly 1.4%, including 1% raises for the city's white-collar workers. Sheehan presented the spending plan to city leaders October 1st at Albany City Hall. Overall, the proposed budget maintains existing city services and programs, anticipating increases in property tax, sales tax revenue, and in payments in lieu of taxes, and state aid to cover salary increases and the rising cost of health care and other benefits. Commercial property owners will see a small increase in their tax bill, but residential property owners will pay basically the same as last year. Sheehan said of the proposed plan, and I quote, "I think what people can take away is we've been able to turn the ship," end quote. Pete DeMola is reporting in the Daily Gazette that Schenectady Mayor Gary McCarthy presented his $89.4 million proposed 2020 budget to the City Council on September 30th. The plan increases spending, gives the mayor a raise, and includes a small property tax cut for taxpayers. The budget includes funds for two positions to help address the disintegrating city-owned infrastructure and an increase for needed management of city-owned properties. Officials said numerous trends are in the city's favor, including a projected increase in casino revenue. In Hudson, city officials are at work on the city's 2020 spending plan. The Board of Estimate and Apportionment, made up of the mayor, city treasurer, and common council president, is meeting in a series of workshops over the coming weeks. The city's 2019 spending plan totaled $11.67 million. WGXE is live streaming the BEA budget workshops at our website and via the Wave Farm radio app. Go to wgxe.org/calendar for more information.
Chris Bragg reports for the Albany Times-Union. On September 30th, a federal judge struck down a new state law requiring nonprofit organizations lobbying in the state capitol to disclose more information about their donors. The law was passed at 3 a.m. on the final night of the 2016 legislative session and was described at the time as a way for the Cuomo administration to take on government reform groups that had been critical of the governor. Federal Judge Denise Coate in the Southern District of New York wrote, quote, "The First Amendment rights to publicly discuss and advocate on issues of public interest and to do so anonymously have long been recognized," unquote, Coate wrote. The state law, quote, "sweeps far more broadly than any disclosure law that has survived judicial scrutiny," unquote. Attorney Randy Mastro, working for the government reform group Citizen Union, agreed, quote, "This state law targeted not-for-profit good government groups that have had the temerity to raise ethics issues and try to get the government to do better," unquote, Mastro said in a statement. Quote, "It's blatantly unconstitutional, and we are therefore grateful to the court for invalidating it," unquote. In a statement, Cuomo spokesperson Rich Azzopardi said there could be an appeal. Quote, "Everyone preaches transparency until transparency shows up on their own front door," unquote, Azzopardi said. Quote, "We are reviewing this decision and considering next steps, including appeal. But the question remains, what is the advocacy industrial complex hiding?" Unquote. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union.
John Whitaker is reporting for the Post-Journal. Legislation introduced earlier this year in the state Senate requiring municipalities to maintain websites. Senate Bill 4908, sponsored by Democrat Senator James Scopus of Newburgh, would amend the state's general municipal law by adding a new article entitled, and I quote, "Municipal Websites," end quote. The legislation will require municipalities to maintain a website that is publicly accessible and provides important information to residents. Under the measure, municipal websites must contain basic information, financial reports, meeting and election notices, meeting agendas and minutes, and an updated version of local code or laws. The bill references a 2014 Empire Center report that highlighted the poor quality of municipal websites, many of which lacked basic information. The report found that less than 20% of local governments received a passing grade for availability of information and usability. Scopus said in his legislation justification, and I quote, "This report's findings are troubling. In 2019, there is no excuse for a municipality not to have a website that is updated regularly and provides citizens with basic information about the operations of their local government," end quote. In the 2014 report, Columbia County earned an F and Greene County received a C for their respective websites. Read the full story in the Post Journal.
Kayla Harris reports in the Albany Times-Union that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, October 1st, largely upheld the Federal Communications Commission's decision to scrap net neutrality. But the court said states such as New York could set up their own internet rules. New York Assemblyperson Patricia Fahey, an Albany-based Democrat, touted her legislation earlier this year to enforce net neutrality rules in state contracts. quote, today's decision renews my urgency for the legislature to pass my bill requiring New York State to adopt some of the strongest net neutrality standards in the nation in order to ensure that all residents have ready access to a free and open internet, unquote, Fahey wrote in an email. That bill passed the Assembly last year, but never had a vote in the Senate. Governor Andrew Cuomo previously issued an executive order barring state government contracts with internet companies that did not follow net neutrality standards. Net neutrality is the principle that internet service providers should provide access to all content and applications regardless of the source and without favoring or blocking particular products or websites. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia Paper. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors, September 11th, authorized three measures for the county to obtain investigative software for the probation department, allowing the sheriff's office to accept a state grant for child car seats, and for the public health department to accept another state grant for its migrant and seasonal workers farm program. County Director of Probation Vincent Dodo explained at the board's Public Safety Committee meeting in August that the investigative software called CLEAR will, and I quote, help locate people, end quote. At present, approximately 10% of the adults sent to probation in Columbia County have absconded. The license for use of the CLEAR software will cost the county roughly $400 a month. The Child Passenger Safety Grant Award totals $3,300 and covers the period from October 1st through September 30th, 2020. The Sheriff's Office provides car seats to financially qualifying families and installs them at no cost. Information about the program is available by calling 518-828-3344. The state grant awarded to the County Health Department Migrant and Seasonal Farm Workers Program funds farm visits that include screening the workers and their families for various health conditions, vaccinations, and educating them on health issues, pesticide protection, and available social services. The health department provides interpreters and distributes informational and educational material in both English and Spanish. It also arranges transportation to medical facilities for those needing treatment. And you can read the full story in the Columbia Paper.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Dutchess County Democrats are making climate change a pivotal issue nationally and locally. On a larger scale, the Dutchess County Democratic Committee wants the Democratic National Committee to hold a debate about climate change. Quote, the initial debates held in June made it clear that we need at least one devoted to climate change, unquote, said Michael Dupree, vice chairperson of the Dutchess Democrats. Locally, they are criticizing Republican County Executive Mark Molinaro, after the American Lung Association gave the county a D rating for ozone. Molinaro said that in, quote, just 10 months, this county has become a certified bronze climate smart community, joining only eight others in New York, unquote. Democrat Joseph Ruggiero is running against Molinaro in November. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 73 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of around 46. And on Thursday, showers are likely mainly after 2 p.m. It will be cloudy with a high near 55 degrees. And Thursday night, showers with a temperature low of around 49. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXC program schedule during the coming week. On Thursday, October 3rd, WGXC Live will carry a live web stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, of an evening curated by the Workers Unite Film Festival, featuring a tribute to local artist Bruce Anderson and performances from Brooklyn-based Color Collage, Catskills' Gary's Dream, and Palinville's Potted Plant, plus a screening of Final Cuts. The webcast begins at 7 p.m. at wgxc.org/listen and is also on 90.7 FM after 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., when it will continue as a webcast at wgxc.org/listen.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
On Wednesday, October 2nd, award-winning writer Emily Sekar, founder of the Hudson Valley Memoir Collective, will be the guest speaker at a buffet luncheon sponsored by the Friends of the Hudson Area Library in the library's community room from 12 to 2 p.m. City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment Budget Workshop, focusing on the Department of Public Works, will be held at Hudson City Hall from 3 to 5 p.m. Rescheduled September 25th meeting of the Catskill Housing Authority Board will be held at the Catskill Housing Authority on Bronson Street at 4 p.m. The Hudson Underground hosts a peer-led and confidential group for LGBTQIA adults where anything can be discussed free of judgment, first and third Wednesdays of every month at 6 p.m. Slide guitarist and bandleader Sony Landreth performs at Club Helsinki Hudson at 8 p.m. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Here's Representative Antonio Delgado talking about impeachment, taking questions from both supporters of an impeachment inquiry of the president and people who are against that idea at a town hall meeting Monday, October 1st in Rhinebeck.
Yeah. I'm coming over here next.
Right, well, listen, I mean, this is...
What's the question?
I'm sorry, thank you. The question was about the campaign piece and the manner in which there are, within the impeachment umbrella, right, there are a host of different areas, one of which is campaign financing and how you are financed and the ways in which that financing was acquired and the ways in which it may or may not have been abused for purposes that aren't deemed legitimate, right? This is all part of one piece of the umbrella inquiry. And the question was, well, you know, how do we get to the bottom of these things if the agencies or the departments that are meant to sort of help facilitate getting to the bottom of them are more or less a challenge, right? And they're not necessarily able to provide that information. Now, that is the kind of question that is a hard one to answer. because it's the same kind of dilemma
protecting the environment. And the head of the EPA has made it their mission to undermine the mission of the EPA. It's the same sort of concept we have with the HUD, with Ben Carson saying that poverty is a state of mind. This is the head of HUD. It's the same you get with Betsy DeVos, who hasn't visited a public school to figure out what the problem is and how she can address the concerns. If every head of agency has at the helm somebody who has made it their career to not be a part of the solution, but to actually be a part of the problem, well, we find ourselves in a rather broken system. And I don't have a good answer. I do know that there are three branches of government. I think the judiciary will continue to have to play a role in terms of us navigating access to information. We'll continue to have to play a role in sort of being the referee and calling balls and strikes on who can get what and when and from who and how. And hopefully these checks and balances will work themselves through. I will say, though, that there are a lot of different things that are being investigated. And I think, as I've said repeatedly, it's worth investigating. I do think that the last set of facts around Ukraine, there's a qualitative difference in the sense that we're talking about, at least on its face, a matter of urgent and credible concern. And the language of urgency there, and the way it sort of includes the nation and almost puts it in its own lane here in terms of what we have to do to get to the bottom of it and quickly and go from there.
Antonio, I can't quite say you represent me. I'm in your district. I'm disappointed. I read your bio. My question is real simple. I would like you to identify tonight the exact crimes that you think have been committed, the crime that causes you to think impeachment versus the head of the country, the ability to talk to other countries.
Yes.
On varieties of it.
Yeah. Yes.
So identify the exact crimes that
Absolutely.
You think happened.
I can do so. First of all, I want to thank you for coming. I appreciate
it. I got your office last week.
Good. Well, next time, hopefully.
I was 11 miles away.
Hopefully, I'll get you on the phone. But I'm happy you're here, front row. First, I'm gonna answer the question of the crime, because there is one. But I also wanna address your important point. And I hope no one takes from my decision that I think we should be shining a spotlight on every single phone call our presidents have with the heads of states, four heads of states. I don't see value in as a general principle. I don't. I think we need to make sure that there are discussions that are allowed to happen that can work themselves out. At the end of the day, we should owe a little bit of that to the president. The difference in this situation is that this came from a whistleblower.
Second hand.
But I'm just saying the genesis of how this unfolded, right? It wasn't that there was a sort of outside-in approach that was coming. It was an inside-out approach. And that's the distinction here. There was somebody inside who was, at least based on the complaint, talking to more than a half dozen individuals. And they were coordinating around what they were seeing. And he or she was ultimately in the position to file the complaint. That's the distinction. On the crime piece,
right.
U.S. Code, the number I think is 5120, quote me on that, but somewhere in that range. Just do me a favor if you can. There is a U.S. Code, there's a statute. The statute makes it pretty clear that it is a crime to solicit any of valor from a foreign national when seeking office or for any sort of electoral purpose. That is the letter of the law. You do not have to receive any. No, you just have to solicit. What is the thing of value in this instance? The thing of value in this instance is to say, hey, Zaleski, could you investigate my political rival? And I don't know if it's that far-fetched, and I'm happy to hear you out on this one, but it's not that far-fetched to conclude that an investigation into a political rival, by the way, an investigation that had already been undergone and closed with no findings by that point. So reopen and hopefully bring about something that can muddy the waters for the benefit of the current occupant in the White House. That's a vow. So to solicit that. Right. And here's the thing that also I just want to highlight. I didn't phrase this because I think it still needs to be worked itself out. It's not the reason why I felt compelled to move forward with the inquiry. But I think it's very worth noting. At the time this discussion was happening, military aid to Ukraine for the purpose of fending off the Russian attack, which also was meant to protect our own soldiers, by the way, who were on the ground there, was being withheld. Despite it having already been appropriated on a bipartisan basis, by Congress. Days before that conversation, the aid was prepared. So that's just circumstantial evidence. The direct evidence is the president's admission that he solicited. He said, yes, I asked him, investigate. Now he has a crime. But even irrespective of that, there's an abuse of power. And the abuse of power, too, layers over that crime in a way that I can really creates a level of urgency and worth of being. Yes?
Back to the question of green jobs in the environment and the volunteer for senior country and the state, risking wildlife, so my concern is about it now. Every time I hear of the EPA rescinding a regulation or restriction or something that diminishes clean air or clean water or allows more use of poisonous pesticides, I say, well, who? What power do we have to stop the EPA from canceling those regulations? I mean, are they self-beholden to corporations and law forces? I mean, we need clean air, clean water. That's one thing we're proud of. But I feel powerless that these administrators are saying it's okay to use German and European gas as a pesticide. Boom.
No, listen,
Is there a microphone for the gentleman?
I can repeat. I'll repeat. The question was, piggybacking off the gentleman's question about the environment and what are we going to do about the fact that the folks who are supposed to be the gatekeepers and protecting the environment are the ones actually causing the problems, rolling back the regulations. And this is the fight that we're in. I mean, we have a president in the administration right now that has rolled back the standards we've had for automobiles, pollution standards. And we add folks out in California say we're going to still move forward with it, irrespective of what you guys want us to do, which is pretty mind-boggling, right? And then you had the fire code regulations that were rolled back under the current administration. They're allowing for drilling. We just had to pass legislation out of the House to protect the Arctic and coastal plains, right, from exploration. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing to fight and fight aggressively against this administration, but this is where, and I hate to say this because it sounds a little bit dismissive, but I don't mean it to be. Elections matter. And, when you put somebody in the White House who doesn't believe that climate change is real, and that there's science there to deal with it, if that's the person elected, do we expect anything else? So the challenge has to be, how do we continue to focus on these issues and identify individuals who are willing to fight and stand up for the environment, who won't take a bunch of money from the fossil fuel industries, right, and then become beholden to that industry at our future's expense, right? And we have to do that work, and that means getting more money out of politics. That also means everybody getting out there engaging more, and that means holding all our officials accountable. And we're going to keep doing the work legislatively, clearly, to keep getting out in front of this. But in a divided country and divided government, it's a hard thing to kind of work through at this point. And I understand your frustration.
Help us, because when they say it's okay to use such and such poison, that we, you and I, have nothing to fight back.
Yeah, I understand the word helpless. United. Don't feel helpless. Don't feel helpless. You know, there's a lot of reasons to be helpless. There's a lot of reasons why you might think it's, you know, you want to throw your hands in the air. But at the end of the day, you always have the power. You always have the power to do something about it. And it might not be right now, right? But you always have the capacity.
Oh, you want to start? John.
Hi, this is John Doe.
Oh, hi, this is Jill Sobiel.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported hands-on radio for Green and Columbia counties. Chaka!
And no Keisha.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio Program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acre or anytime at WGXC.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Seth Lane of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, October 2nd, 2019. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and House Democrats spar over the impeachment investigation, and net neutrality suffers a setback in court. We start off on Capitol Hill, where Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has rebuked House Democrats' plans to depose five State Department officials as part of the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Pompeo accused the Democrats heading the investigation of attempting to intimidate officials. Democrats shot back at Pompeo, saying any attempt to block State Department employees from speaking to Congress is illegal and would constitute evidence of obstruction of the impeachment inquiry. Net neutrality suffered a significant blow on Tuesday as the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the Trump administration's rollback of Obama-era consumer protections. Suzanne Potter has the details.
The court upheld the repeal, so it remains legal for internet service providers like AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon to block or throttle any sites they want and to charge more money for internet fast lanes. Evan Greer with the nonprofit Fight for the Future says those companies spent hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions in their quest to dismantle basic protections.
They want to be able to control what we see and what we do online so they can squeeze us all for more money.
The big ISPs so far have refrained from anti-competitive practices since the repeal took effect in 2018. But this ruling clears the path for them to favor websites that they own or that pay big bucks for faster upload times. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, a former attorney for Verizon, says net neutrality discouraged telecom companies from investing in internet infrastructure.
Unionized workers in New York are praising three recent court rulings that uphold the rights of immigrants nationwide.
In three separate rulings last Friday, federal judges blocked the Trump administration's attempt to detain immigrant children indefinitely and issued a preliminary injunction against the fast-track deportation of immigrants anywhere in the country without due process. Another case permanently enjoined an ICE hub in California from requesting that local law enforcement detain immigrants based on a flawed database. Those rulings bring some security to members of SEIU Local 32BJ and their families. Union Vice President Shirley Aldabal says the majority of its members are immigrants with temporary protected status or green cards or are naturalized citizens.
They have been part of the fabric of this country for many years, and part of the culture of our union is that of a union of immigrant workers.
Claiming they bring crime and drain resources, the administration has stepped up efforts to deport undocumented people and prevent new immigrants from settling in this country. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
This is PNS. America's unemployment rate remains very low, but that doesn't always apply to people with disabilities. It's an issue Iowa is working on, as Roz Brown reports.
As part of October's National Disability Employment Awareness Month, employers across the state are reminded that many people with disabilities want to work and often need only minimal help to transition into the workforce. Brooke Lovelace with the Iowa Developmental Disability Council says evidence shows that individuals with disabilities can be highly successful workers, but they still face obstacles.
Nationally, there's still a 41% employment gap between people who have disabilities and people who do not have disabilities. Iowa is a little bit better than that, where that gap is only at 36%, but we have a long ways to go.
We all know that drinking water is essential to health, and the American Heart Association of Virginia is proposing adding water bottle filling stations to all new or renovated schools throughout the state.
Studies have shown that kids who have access to filling stations at schools for their water bottles see major health benefits, says Chelsea Bennett with the American Heart Association Virginia.
There was significant decline in their likelihood of being overweight, as well as water helps improve short-term memory, fine motor skills, it's important for the digestive system, muscles, joints, tissues.
She says the American Heart Association is working with Virginia's Republican State Senator Bill Stanley on legislation in the 2020 General Assembly to bring more water stations into schools.
That was Diane Bernard reporting. And finally, one faith group hopes to get people talking about the importance of public schools, as some North Carolina counties continue to see a rise in charter school openings and drop in public school enrollment.
The North Carolina Council of Churches is launching a series of public discussions across the state. Allison Mahaley with the council says she hopes public dialogue will reinvigorate the debate for public schools and get local communities thinking about what it means for every child to have a fair shot at a good education.
We believe we can bring the community back together around fully resourcing public schools so that if people still opt for a private school or a charter school or something else, they can see that their advocacy for public schools is good for the common good.
Nationwide, charter school enrollment has jumped. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, between 2000 and 2015, the percentage of public school students who attended charter schools swelled from 1 to 6%, and the number of charter schools increased from just under 2,000 to more than 6,000. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update.
I'm Philip Grant. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper on details of the September 17th meeting of the Hudson Board of Education, including news on high school electives, the district's declining enrollment, and the first week of school. During a curriculum workshop, the board heard members of the high school faculty discuss available elective courses as well as college courses made available for students under the auspices of SUNY Cobleskill. Some of the courses allow students to earn both high school and college credit. Outgoing Hudson High School principal Antonio Tini Abitable reported that enrollment at the high school is the lowest it has ever been. He said, and I quote, "You can feel it. There is a noticeable difference in the hallways and cafeteria," end quote. Abitable said class schedules are running well, but, and I quote, "Maybe that's because we have so few students," end quote. Montgomery C. Smith Elementary School principal Mark Burnerman reported his school had a, and I quote, "much smoother opening than last year," end quote, despite the presence of, and I quote, "a lot of new staff," end quote. The curriculum this year focuses on science, and the Breakfast with Dad program was a big success, he said. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. The backlash against the decision by Rensselaer County officials to exclude the city of Troy as the site for early voting now includes a legislative response from Senator Neil Breslin. The Bethlehem Democrat who represents Troy has put forward legislation requiring counties to place at least one early voting site in the most heavily populated municipality within their borders. Troy, which has nearly 27,000 voters, will not have a polling site for early voting, while Brunswick and Skodak, with less than 10,000 registered voters apiece, are serving as early voting sites. In Schenectady and Albany counties, the largest city will have early voting sites. The legislation could not be enacted in time for elections this year, but it could be passed next year in time for the 2020 races. Read the full story in the Times Union. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Dutchess County Conservative Committee has elected Fishkill resident Donald Minichino as its new chairperson. He takes over from Maureen Natrella, who did not seek re-election. A outspoken community activist and longtime member of the committee, Minichino plans to form a regional alliance with conservative leaders. He said, and I quote, "One of my goals is to reach out to leaders in Orange and Ulster counties. We have some assembly districts and congressional districts that cross the lines, and we are going to pool our thoughts together and see what we can do as a co-op," end quote. The 19th congressional district, currently represented by Democrat Antonio Delgado, includes portions of Dutchess and 11 other counties. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Janet T. Mulder is reporting for Syracuse.com. State officials are warning consumers to stay away from health insurance policies being marketed as Trump care plans. Linda A. Lacewell, the state's financial service superintendent on October 2nd, said, and I quote, "We know that so-called Trump care, or however else these short-term plans are marketed, is nothing more than a ploy to convince Americans to buy junk insurance," end quote. Lacewell is responding to reports that the county is being flooded with health insurance plans that fail to provide meaningful coverage. The Trump administration recently changed a provision in the Federal Affordable Care Act to allow insurers to sell plans with terms as short as 3 months. Lacewell said the sale of short-term health insurance plans is illegal in New York, regardless of the changes in federal regulations. Any New York resident who may have purchased these plans is advised to file complaints online with the State Financial Services Department or to call its Consumer Assistance Hotline at 800-342-3736. And you can read the full story at Syracuse.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting showers and possibly thunderstorms between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. today. It will be a cloudy Tuesday afternoon with a temperature high near 73 degrees and a light and variable north wind at 5 to 9 miles an hour. For tonight, a chance of showers mainly before 7 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 45 and a north wind at around 9 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, showers are likely mainly between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m., then rain after 2 p.m. with a temperature high near 52 degrees. More rain Thursday night, mainly before 5 a.m. with a temperature low of around 50 degrees. And on Friday, a chance of rain before 8 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 56 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear with a low of around 35. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. That is CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This past week, I took to the streets with my friends Deswan and Adonis. We asked people about their experience with housing justice. Here's what they shared.
We're losing housing. Soon there won't be any housing. The only discussion out here is tourists. It's from weekends to weekend, and soon it's going to week, month to month, and the people are going to be gone. So the question is, where is the housing?
Thank you.
What are some of your issues with affordable housing in Hudson?
Well, I don't think it's affordable housing really to the people who live in Hudson. I feel like a lot of cities throughout the United States now are going through gentrification, which brings a new crowd into a neighborhood. And I feel like with the amount of jobs here and the pay that they pay on the jobs, the rent is kind of based off the new incomers that are coming. So it's higher for, it's a higher amount for anyone who currently lives in Hudson or has grown up in Hudson to afford. I mean, I grew up here. You know, you get a two-bedroom house for maybe $650 a month for rent. They're now $2,600. There's not enough jobs in Hudson for people to be able to afford $2,600 in rent.
One of the things that really bothers me incessantly, it irritates me to no end, is when you have landlords that will not allow children. And I don't think that that's fair, nor do I think that that's right.
I don't think it's no affordable housing around here at all. I'm a single grandma and I went to get a one bedroom, and they told me all over Columbia County, Hudson, New York, $1,500 and up. How am I gonna afford that? I'm on Medicaid, low income. I cannot afford the rates of all the new people that's coming up here and buying us out and jacking the rent sky high. I would like to see more affordable rates, landlords that are fair, and landlords that come out with their tenants to see what we need in Hudson, New York, Columbia County.
Are you familiar with the renter's law that was passed on June 14th?
Are you familiar with the renter's law that was passed on June 14th?
I am not.
Okay, well, there was a law passed on June 14th, obviously. The law is mostly to protect renters so that they stay where they are. So if you were to be living somewhere for a year or less, you get 30 days to either pay off your debt and, like, so you're not being homeless right away. If you've been there for 1 to 2 years, you get 60 days. And then if you've been there for 3 years or more, you get 90 days. And in that time, you can also pay off whatever debt they're saying you owe. And then also another thing is now legally, when you pay, whether you pay in cash or anything, you have to get a receipt. Both you and the tenant have to get a receipt, and you have to keep that, and they have to keep that on file for 3 years. They can't just evict you, and if they're saying that you didn't pay, and that's the reason of eviction, they have to have put that complaint in within 5 days. So, like, they can't say, like, a week later that, like, oh, well, now it's missing. Da-da-da. No, too late for that. And that's mostly what it's about.
What is your take on the law?
I think it's great for renters. I think it gives them a lot more power than they've had previously. And it holds landlords and realtors accountable in ways that they were able to take advantage of renters.
My issue with the new law that's being enacted is the fact that circumstances can make it difficult for people to come up with that money within the 30 days. And I've had that here at Section in Providence Hall and Schuyler Court, and they get kicked out instead.
What are some of your experiences, if you have any, with affordable housing?
I don't have any experiences with affordable housing, but I mean, I know a lot of people who do live in affordable housing, and I know that, like, for some people it's like kind of difficult to be able to, like, make rent sometimes. And I know for other people, like, they feel like they're kind of being pushed out of communities because of, like, how much property is being bought up in Hudson. For somebody who's, like, been incarcerated, or for somebody who is, like, a young parent or things like that, I think that would make it, like, a lot more difficult.
I work in human service, so I deal with work at a school. I deal with a lot of parents who deal with being evicted because they can't afford rent. I deal with parents who have been pushed out of a location because someone else bought their house, and new landlords want to raise the rent because of they see all the new things that's going on in Hudson. They feel like they get more money. So I have family members that my grandmother lives in housing that helps her, and it's always an issue hoping that someone else doesn't come in and buy that place. So
I feel that one of the problems that I've been encountering as a support services coordinator for low-income housing is the affordability and the lack of housing as per Section 8 in HUD housing, and the fact that the tenants' rights are being abused. And there's no Section 8 housing in this vicinity. If you want Section 8 housing, it's mostly outside of Hudson. And what's causing that issue is we have people then with no transportation. They don't have vehicles, or they're elderly and disabled, and they can't go out of the city limits. But because we're having such an influx with the new people coming in from New York City and the landlords, Galvin Foundation has eaten up a lot of the properties around here, which is leaving people that have been here all their life, born and raised, or transplants, like myself, who's been here almost 30 years, without places to stay. Mm-hmm.
I also think that, like, just in the grand scheme of things, not even just in Hudson, but that, like, lower income housing should not just be, like, in one section of a place for, like, people to, like, you live in this corner because you're in low income housing and, like, all the rich people can live over here. I think it should be, like, spread out, like, more like a town. So, like, this apartment here is, like, 25,000 or whatever, and this apartment here is, like, 900 a month or whatever, however much rent is, you know? Mm. Things like that. I think it should be more spread out, not just, like, segregated into neighborhoods. That, like, whole not in my backyard thing should definitely be more integrated.
Every person who's a landlord in anywhere, it doesn't matter if it's Columbia County or anywhere, they should have a stack of tenant right books so that they can hand out to each of their tenants when they do their leases. And so that way it gives the tenants a knowledge and understanding of what their rights are as a tenant in their buildings.
I think that most of the gentrification comes in because the upper class, I would say, and I wouldn't even say the upper class, I would say usually some big tycoon feels like they know, they find a location, they feel like, oh, I can make money off of that location. Mm-hmm. I can bring in new businesses, I can bring more revenue into that location, and I think they kind of pass this along by saying, we're fixing up a neighborhood. You know, we're bringing income to that neighborhood, but I feel like that's good to do, but it shouldn't affect the people who live there. You know, I feel like, you know, communities are being lost. I came back here in probably 2006, and I probably, 2006, and I was just amazed by how different it looked. I'm amazed by how different Warren Street looks from every other street in this town. You know, so I think it's mainly, you know, it's never the poor, you know, who's making these decisions. It's always people who have money who's making these decisions, and it's usually the poor who get hurt the most.
Yeah, which is why we with Housing Justice feel it's best to educate people on this new law so that they have more of a stern foundation.
I feel like with anybody in this world, I always tell my kids, you gotta know all the laws. Because I think a lot of laws that are out there and different rights that you have, a lot of people are used to not knowing about them, so they suffer the most. And I feel like if we kind of educate ourselves a little more on different laws and rules and, you know, some of the opportunities and benefits, it probably can help along a little bit, you know? We talk up, we stand up to these landlords and all these people who are trying to push out a certain population or a certain culture, and I feel like maybe one day we'll get somewhere.
Come on, Hudson, New York. Please help us out, and let's get affordable apartments in Columbia County.
Well, thank you for your time. We at Kite's Nest really appreciate it. And, thank you.
Thank you.
Here I am. That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The Hudson Area Library Tween Advisory Council presents an original escape room, Altered Zone, New York, Monday, October 14th from 11 to 3 at the Hudson Area Library.
Backed by popular demand, come and play as a ragtag team of friends or family in this original escape room. This game is limited to 15 minutes, and the team with the shortest time will win a special prize!
RSVP online at HudsonAreaLibrary.org or call 518-828-1792. Don't miss all the fun.
Yeah, so come.
Oh, Matt. Thank you for coming here, Congressman, to our little town and talking to us this evening. My question is this. Given what we all know is going on with this impending impeachment, and all indications are to me that there is going to be an impeachment. Whether or not the man's actually going to be removed from office, I think that's a bigger question. But I'm just wondering if you think there's any appetite once this has been resolved, whenever that's going to be, in the Democratic majority House to do away with the Electoral College.
Thank you.
my thought on electoral college. With the electoral college, that is, you know, pertinent in terms of understanding its portions and sort of how it came to pass. That you can make a case is, you know, not ideal. At the end of the day, though, to try to take that.